Hey you, welcome back to another episode of Impressions, your backstage pass to the ever-evolving world of digital marketing in Africa. Today, we're all about performance marketing, a world where every penny counts. We'll explore the differences between roles like paid ad specialist, media buyer, and performance marketer, as well as the latest trends and best practices that are shaping the industry. And to guide us is Emmanuel Mang, performance marketing strategist at Hey Digital, with a wealth of experience across different industries and platforms. Today, Emmanuel will not only share his framework for building effective strategies, but he'll also give us a sneak peek into his workflow, the tools he uses, and how he measures success in this fast-paced field. So whether you're curious about starting a career in performance marketing, mastering A/B testing, measuring ROI, or even building a high-impact performance marketing team, this episode is packed with insights that you don't want to miss. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy this conversation. I'm Dara, your host for this season. Let's dive in. Mang, before we go ahead, there's something I'd like to clarify, because I hear different titles for somehow the same role. I hear a performance marketer, I hear media buyer, I hear paid ad specialist, and I'm just trying to clarify if these are different roles or they are all the same. How do they differ or anything?
Wow, you just threw me into the hot seat, like, without even giving
it's
me...
It's not a hot... Mark, please, okay?
Okay, so typically, I believe that they all mean different things, right? But somehow, somewhere, they have currently been made to look like they are all one and the same. From what I think, so when it comes to performance marketing, rather, I think it pretty much speaks to, you know, any marketing activity that you're engaged in that requires that you optimize your campaigns on certain performance metrics, right? So it could be like you're looking at certain kind of maybe like click-through rates, engagement rates for your campaign, you know, and then the goal ideally is just to ensure that you meet certain performance standards for that campaign, you know. But where it now differs is it could be across different different kind of marketing campaigns or channels, right? So it could be maybe like paid ads side of things. So where you're running like Google campaigns, Facebook campaigns, sorry, Meta campaigns, X campaigns, which is...
I thought you were going to say Twitter.
Yeah, you know, or LinkedIn, as the case may be. It could also be maybe like affiliate marketing related, you know, but then you have certain performance metrics that you need to meet, you know, for that marketing campaign. You know, it could also be maybe like an SEO kind of related campaign, you know, but then you just have certain performance metrics, or even email marketing, but you just have certain performance metrics that you need to meet, you know, across all those various campaigns. So that would be, you know, performance marketing. But when it comes to paid ads is, as it's called, paid ads.
Paid ads.
So it's pretty much restricted to the platforms. So like Google Ads, Meta Ads, X Ads, LinkedIn Ads, Quora Ads, Reddit Ads, you know, YouTube Ads, as the case may be. So it's pretty much your optimizing campaign solely for those ad platforms, you know. And then when it comes to media buying, ideally, I would say it's pretty much associated more with like the traditional marketing space, you know, where you have to buy like out of home media, you know, but lately it's also infused like into the digital media buying space. But for the media buyer specifically, I would like to say it pretty much deals or speaks to people who pretty much negotiate with maybe like ad platforms or ad inventories, you know, just to get like a slot on that ad network space, you know, for you to push your product. So the same way someone would literally like speak to maybe a digital publishing house, you know, and say, okay, do you have this particular space on your website, on your newspaper publication, for instance, for a particular maybe like front page, you know, similarly just translating it into the digital space and then saying, okay, on your website, is there like a front page space where, you know, I could display an ad? So the media buyer pretty much tries to help you negotiate and get those kind of deals. And then ultimately, all these roles, I think they work hand in hand. So your media buyer does this, right? The paid ads guy ensures that this takes flight, as it were. And then the performance marketer pretty much like looks at all the various channels they're running campaigns on and then, you know, says, okay, for, you know, this set of campaign, we've met our performance metrics based on the goals that has been set. So yeah, but these days, like I said, when I started, pretty much everything is intertwined, you know, so probably someone who is a paid media or a paid ads person is pretty much involved in the digital media buying space,
yeah.
Which I have done before, because I mean, when I'm running campaigns, I'm not just focused on just Google ads, you know, sometimes I have to speak to like publishers and then say, okay, I need to get the deal 1 month, 1 year, 6 months period, you know, how much is it, you know, and then infuse that into my overall campaign strategy. So
That's the clearest way I think anyone has explained or differentiated those job titles to me, or maybe because I haven't really searched enough about what the difference is. I just hear it, and I know I've worked with paid ad specialists, but then I see some other people tag their job title as performance marketers, and then you check the job description, it's still mostly paid ad. So that definitely clears things out. And like, just randomly, how long have you been working in the industry?
Working in the industry, I think I'm still quite young.
Oh Christ. Here we go.
Yeah, I'm still young, actually. I would say I started fully, like, why do I feel like after this question, next video will be, okay, so how did your career start?
No, because you're already answering the question. Like, I'm not going to need to ask that. You just go off.
So yeah, I think I started fully, I would say, in 2017, right? But before then, pretty much I'd gotten into this space.
What do you mean by you started fully in 2017?
Yeah, so I actually started working in like an organization, in an agency fully, you know, as a paid media person in 2017. But before
that, prior to that, you were doing that?
Yeah, before then, you know, I think when I was in my 300 level in school, I kind of like stumbled. I was part of the first Google Student Club in my school. And so what that meant was I got the opportunity to be exposed to like digital marketing. I attended like a Google online marketing lab where some folks from Dublin pretty much teach around digital marketing. So that was like my first foray into digital marketing. And then after that, okay, so that also gave rise to me holding. So there was, Google used to have this Google Online Marketing Challenge competition years back where you just pick like a non-profit and then they give you around $50 to run campaigns for them. So I pretty much got the opportunity to train some people.
Yeah, I know. I think I attended one of your training. This, how you know, is an OG, okay? Like when I was that amount, so I probably attended one. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a humble person, so.
Oh, please. Okay.
So yeah, but after that, you know, fully like 2017, yeah, I got my first role in a digital marketing agency. And then, yeah, since then, it's been way up, thankfully. So, yeah.
Did you think you were going to do marketing at any point before you started doing marketing? Or was it a thing of you just stumbled into it?
So by the time I was going to be done from the university, right, I pretty much already knew. I mean, I studied mechanical engineering. I know.
Yeah.
People ask me, so mechanical engineering, what's for you? And this, but I like to say, I think sometimes in my year two, I borrowed a course from systems engineering, which is engineering society, if I remember correctly. And then what the lecturer said, it was a guest lecturer actually from the US. And then he tried to let us see that. I mean, the engineer's role in society pretty much is the intersection between human needs, you know, and scientific knowledge. So pretty much you're using scientific knowledge, you apply scientific knowledge to meet human needs. And what I'm doing today in the digital marketing space is pretty much similar, right? All I'm just doing is I'm using like that digital knowledge, you know, and then trying to solve or help people who have...
You will find the solutions.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was going to be done with the university, I pretty much already knew that, okay, so it was either digital marketing or engineering. I served my country faithfully for like 1 year.
Which country?
Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
good to know.
So I served for 1 year, and in that year, I served in an engineering firm. But by the time I was done with that, I pretty much had made that decision that, okay, yeah, I was going to go full-time into digital marketing. So it's not like I stumbled upon it upon it when I was done with school, was a conscious decision that, okay, yeah, I'm going into this space.
Interesting. I don't think I've heard your background or your foray into digital marketing. So that's interesting to know. So I'm just going to jump in now with the questions. So my first question is there a particular framework that you use or you go by, that you live by as a performance marketing manager? And what is your workflow like? I feel like that's a two-in-one question.
When you say framework.
Yeah, like is there a guiding thing that has helped me on different projects I've worked on? This is how I think about it.
So I think the framework would pretty much be similar to what, you know, any marketing person would do whenever they like kind of like have a campaign to run, right? So I think it first of all starts off with like your objectives and KPIs, right? What exactly are you looking to achieve? And then, you know, once you have that set out, then the next thing is pretty much the people. Because at the end of the day, anything you are doing as a marketing professional, you know, boils down to the people you are actually trying to reach, right? So segmenting or building that audience, you know, your, like they like to call it your buyer persona, you know, what are the kind of people you're trying to reach, you know, where do they hang out, what time do they spend, you know, all these things are pretty much very key things to consider, you know, and then based off who your audience is, what they like to do, you know, you can now move into like your channel breakdown. So, you know, what channels or where do they spend time in, you know, and then you can now go down to understand, because once you understand who your target audience is, you also pretty much discover what their pain points are, you know, what are they trying to, or how, what solution do you have to whatever problem or needs that they have, right? And then build that, your creative pretty much and your messaging, you know, around addressing those pain points. And then once you have that, run your campaigns, you know, take your learnings, you know, do some iteration based on, you know, what's working and what's not working. Because I think at the end of the day, like every marketing professional, pretty much, not just performance marketers, should have a framework where you actually have learnings. And then from those learnings, you can actually see what's working, what's not working, and then refine, you know, just to make sure that you continuously get the best out of it.
Yeah.
So, but then, typically, what my work day, I think that was the next question, right?
Yeah.
So typically, what my
go off
pretty much looks like, you know, it's pretty much, there should be like a, more like a project management tool that you actually have. I don't know if you still asked me a question around tools, but
I will, but you can answer it now, so I don't have to ask.
So of course, you should have like a project management tool. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like a paid tool. It could also be like a notepad, pretty much, you know, outlining, okay, these are things that you have to do for whatever clients you have or portfolio that you have, right? Once you do that, you can now prioritize. You know, I learned something in school, then, you know, someone said something around how they prioritize their tasks. So you have like four quadrants. You have like urgent, not urgent, important, not important. You know, just put your tasks in those different metrics, really. You know, what is urgent and important, you know, what is urgent and not important, what is urgent, you know, and
sounds like, I think, the ICE framework. The one where they do impact, whatever. I can't remember it. Okay.
But yeah, but just that just helps you like have a clear head and then know how to prioritize what you need to do. And then also, one thing that's very important is, I mean, there's no man that's an island of knowledge. So you pretty much have colleagues, you have direct colleagues you're working with, you have people who are also in the industry. You could also reach out when you're stuck. So I always try to, and then just always try to stay abreast of what's happening generally in the field. So every day, at least, with the way my LinkedIn is set up.
But yeah, I always see you publish something at least one in a week, I think.
Yeah, and then I also have people who, once I just log into LinkedIn, I see their content, so I can actually learn new stuff with what's happening in the industry. So yeah, that's pretty much. And then sometimes get on client calls. Sometimes, we fight. Sometimes we laugh. Right.
Typical.
By the end of the day,
You mentioned channels earlier understanding your audience then before you get to choosing a channel that where your audience are active. So I wanted to ask, what do you think is an underrated channel that has worked for you as a performance marketing person in Africa? A channel that is that has surprised you most times, or something that is just underrated?
So if I say in Africa, it may not be in Africa.
In Nigeria.
Well, okay.
Could be anywhere.
So it could be anywhere. Okay. So I think in Nigeria, I really don't think I've experimented as much with so many channels, you know, because I think in this part of the world, everybody likes to stay with what they know. So most times you just like Google.
And have the
Facebook,
budget to
Google,
test
exactly.
Things.
So Google, Meta, maybe a few people LinkedIn, and then I think most recently people are beginning to embrace like X, you know. But yes, if I was to say okay, I think I've been involved in maybe a little influencer marketing at one point in time, you know, where I had to manage like some influencers to push like a sports brand. And I think that there's potential in influencer marketing if you actually engage like the right person. So I wasn't expecting the kind of results that I saw from a particular influencer name. Let's call influencer the one who should not be named. But then I engaged this influencer, and then I had like other popular influencers within that niche, right? But then this influencer had pretty much like fewer followers, right? And then it probably looked like he wasn't as big as the other ones. But one thing I always do with my campaigns is I like to track my campaigns. So of course I shared like a tracked URL link with the influencers. I shortened it so it doesn't look so long. And then on the back end on Google Analytics, I was like pretty much saying, okay, so signups that were coming in, and then what influencer source, you know, they came from. And then funny enough, the person I didn't expect, you know, actually drove. And then is that he was pretty much like, not to downplay like his work or his pricing, but he was actually not as expensive as others, you know, but then the results that came from him was great. I think outside of Nigeria, another channel I pretty much have seen potential with, I would say Quora Ads. And it was quite shocking because I think I made a post about it on my LinkedIn. Because pretty much you would not expect that a platform like Quora maybe might give you as much. But when you really look at what the platform is about, I think in marketing, there's what they like to call like push channels and pull channels. You know, push channels pretty much maybe like you have like your display campaigns on like Google Display, Facebook, where you are pretty much trying to interrupt the user when they're in that particular space. You know, but you have pull channels where the users actually, they're the ones who actually initiate, you know, that process for you to show them your ads. So like a Google search, for instance, the user goes and then types something. And Quora, for me, pretty much seems like a push channel because people are asking questions, right? And then they need answers to questions. So it's pretty much you just infusing your ad in such a way that it naturally tends to like give them that kind of response that they need, right? And then, yeah, I saw good success with it in terms of top level metrics, just people coming into the sign up page and then people actually moving from that top level metrics, you know, even to the bottom of the funnel where they actually signed up, you know, as users of the platform. So yeah, I would say those two.
I don't think I've heard someone mention Quora Ads. So that's one that I'll definitely take a look at.
Sorry, but then platform also depends on the product you're pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if your audience, you know, do not spend time asking such kind of questions on Quora, there's no need to be there.
Yeah, you said out of Nigeria also, so that kind of even gives context into like the audience, the product. I'm coming to tools now, so I'm going to ask, what tools do you mostly use as a performance marketer that guides your work, like in different stages of your performance marketing duties?
Okay, so like I mentioned, I mean, project management tools. So first off, I always have a notes and a pen, because sometimes I think
the physical note.
Yes, because someone said something when you write, actually, it's hard for you to forget. So, and then I also have a fine handwriting, so sometimes it's good to always appreciate my fine handwriting. So I have a note and a pen. Then other times, so beyond that, at work, we have like a project management tool called ClickUp. I think there are other versions. Some people use Trello, some people use Asana, you know, it all depends on what works for whoever. But at work, we use ClickUp. So ClickUp is pretty much the one-stop shop where you pretty much see everything that you need to work on for that day. Even
like Notion.
Yeah, pretty much like Notion. Sorry, I should have mentioned Notion, but I don't use Notion.
Yeah.
So you pretty much see all that you're supposed to do, you know, for that day and then even the next 2-3 days, right? And then it just helps you understand what your workload is like, you know. And then we also have like priority flags, which is similar to what I said before about like urgent, important, and stuff like that. So when you see like red flags, you know that, okay, you need to get to this tax as quickly as possible, because it's possible that someone else is dependent on you completing that tax early enough, you know. So other than that.
Yeah, outside project management tools.
So for my campaign management, right, on Google Ads. So of course, there's the regular Google Ads, Meta Ads interface, you know, and all of that. But then there are also some other tools that you could use. So you have tools like Optio. So caveat, nobody is paying me to mention this brand.
How do you spell that?
Optio. So it's O-P-T-E-O.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have tools like that. They can pretty much help you with like your Google Ads management. But it's not like I use it for all the clients, right? So it's just like a few, because it's pretty much subscription based. But most of the time, most of the work I do when it comes to campaign management, I do it like in the ad platform. So I just literally go in and then look into the ad platforms and metrics I'm looking out for, and then look for trends as well. When it comes to reporting, so for reporting, I use Google Lookout Studio. It's pretty much similar to, what would I say? Is it like Microsoft Power BI?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just helps with your data analysis reporting better.
Exactly. And then you can just have like one dashboard, you know, where people do not literally have to go to the ad platforms to look at, you know, what metrics that you need to get. I also use Google Sheets. Sorry, I wanted to say Google Excel. I also use Google Sheets, right? Just for like data crunching numbers, you know, and all of that. Then when it comes to conversion tracking, I have tools like Google Tag Manager, you know, where I pretty much set up all marketing tags and then set up tracking, you know, and then also have Google Analytics. Have GA4, you know, where I can just see what's going on my client's website. And then there are some clients also have like other tools that they use generally. So you have tools like, because currently I'm pretty much playing around like the B2B SaaS space. So people have like B2B attribution tools, like maybe like Dream Data, for instance, you know, and tools like that, just to help you see like the multi-touch attribution system that exists. Because user journey is pretty much not linear any longer. So someone does not literally go from, I saw your ad and then I'm buying immediately. Sometimes they could be like, they see your ad, they go to organic social, before they go to SEO, organic search, SEO, and then paid search converts eventually. So yeah, so there are tools like that.
Thank you for sharing that. So I'm just going to double down on some tools you mentioned and asking about valuable skills or tools that people just getting into the industry actually need to learn to get a chance to even start out in the industry as of today. Like, what are some of these tools that they actually need to know very well to like get entry level roles? Or if you were hiring, what would you look out for in an applicant?
Okay. So I think the thing with tools would be that you can always learn to use any tool at any point in time, right? When it comes to hiring, I think the first thing you look out for really is, you know, how solid is the person's foundation? Because no matter how advanced anybody goes, right, you literally always have to build on that foundation. So the foundation that you have is pretty much that building block, you know, for you as you scale up.
What do you mean by foundation?
Oh, sorry, I did not explain that. So how much you understand the basics, you know, of digital marketing generally, right? I'm an advocate for people being C-shaped marketers, in the sense that you have an idea of how the different parts of digital marketing work, but then you specialize in one. As much as, yes, I'm focused on like the paid side of things, I pretty much still understand that, you know, there are other parts of digital marketing that are pretty much important and you need to understand, you know, how they work. So there's the content part, there's the social part, email marketing, you know, even down to conversion rate optimization, you know, and the list goes on and on and on, you know. So that's understanding the basics is pretty much setting up yourself in such a way that you have a holistic view of what digital marketing is, but then you now double down on a particular part and then say, okay, this is where you pretty much want to focus. But before you even decide that this is where you want to focus, having gone through all of all those, it just helps you. Because for me, for instance, when I started off, I think I did some social media, and then I did like SEO, and then eventually, like, learned a little bit about other parts, but I just said, oh no, I think paid media works for me, right? And then I doubled down, you know, on that. So in terms of tools, I would say, if you're going to work in this space, you'll be dealing with a lot of numbers, right? And because you're dealing with a lot of numbers, Google Sheets is a no-brainer. You need to learn, you know, how it works, you know, even down to functions that you can actually use to crunch data faster. So there are functions like the pivot table on Sheets, similar to Excel, right, that you need to learn about. There are other functions as well that ideally you should just learn, so it just helps you know how to manage data. Then the other thing is tracking. So setting up tracking is actually very key. I'm a very big advocate for running any marketing campaign, you should actually be able to measure it. You know, whether your client comes and says, oh, all I want is awareness, I just want people to see my ads, all right? Always look for something within that campaign that you can actually tie to a measurable metric. So beyond just reporting, oh, we served 1 million impressions and then we had a reach of 600K, right? That is sweet, yes. But how did that really like impact the bottom line for the client, right? So always find that one thing. So tracking and measurement is actually key. So it's another, it is actually another skill, you know, that anybody playing in this space should learn. So learning about tools like Google Tag Manager, you know, and how you can effectively use them to implement your tracking and measurement is also very key. So for me, I would say your reporting tools, Sheets, Google Lookout Studio. Google Lookout Studio should be something that I think everybody should learn to do. Then Google Tag Manager tool as well, just to ensure that your tracking and management is fine. Other things like the Google Ads platform, you know, all of that, you can literally like learn that on the go because you work with them daily, right? But these other tools, they could literally like help you, yeah, stand out.
Interesting. I'm not going to ask you what you think of the current AI is going to take everyone's job. What I'm going to ask you is, what are some emerging innovations or technology that you're excited about that you currently use or you're looking forward to, especially in your role as a performance marketer?
Yeah.
Exciting. Well, I don't know if it's really exciting because...
It's exciting to you. That's enough. Okay. I don't worry.
PR stuff. There. You know, the privacy regulation. And then Google recently launching the fact that you need to enable consent mode, especially if you are pushing campaigns in the EEA region, right? EU, pretty much. It's kind of like exciting because for me, and then the reason why I say it's kind of like exciting.
I was going to ask you to explain why it's exciting, but I love that you just go off.
It helps you, or it will cost you rather, to see, you know, how well you can innovate in ensuring that you continue to improve performance, right? How best can you use the data that's available to you, right, to improve, you know, your campaigns generally. So it's just pretty much like trying to get you to think outside the box, right, and then away from the usual thing. So you get the opportunity to experiment, to test, and then see what that brings. Secondly, I would say, I think it's called DCO, Dynamic Creative Optimization, you know, where the system pretty much learns or understands who the user is and then just try to use like dynamic creatives. So it shows different people, of course it's the same campaign, but it shows different people, different creatives based on how well the machine algorithm thinks that, okay, this individual would respond to this, you know, over this. I think there's also the rave of voice search generally, you know, with Alexa, Siri, you know, and the likes. But yeah, I haven't really like delved into that as much as possible. But the rave is just, okay, I'm trying to see how you can optimize your website content, you know, just to ensure that these platforms can actually profile your website, you know, as that answer when people have, you know, questions. So yes, and then that's programmatic, it's good. So with the way programmatic works generally, you have the opportunity to just, instead of engaging like a physical media buyer, like I said in the first place, you know, with programmatic, you can actually get some deals, you know, off programmatic platforms like Google DV360, you know, and then you also have like Eskimia actually has one as well, Descritio. So you can actually use all of these platforms to actually get deals and then engage in real-time bidding where you can actually save your ads to users, you know, real-time, you know, based on certain features, real-time. So yeah.
It does sound interesting, especially if the content recommendation one for showing ads to consumers and all of that, yeah. So let's talk about best practices based on your experiences. What are some best practices for A/B testing, campaign optimization, measurement, and attribution that you think this is the way people should think about it over time? This is how I've learned how to think about this better to make me have better results.
Okay. Yeah. So for that, I think I'll just use an example where I work currently. Yeah. So we have an experiment framework, and the goal of the experiment framework is pretty much every month you should try to test something new for the clients to see how it could move the needle, you know, in terms of the results. And I think I'll just use that experiment framework pretty much to explain in terms of like best practices. So I think beyond the overall, you have your KPIs, your objectives, you know, and whatnot. So I think the first thing to do is, beyond that, right, is actually have like an hypothesis. So what exactly are you trying to achieve? Like, okay, I've noticed XYZ, if I do ABC, you know, I think we should get DEF, for instance, you know. And then from there, the next thing is, okay, you give it a period of time, a duration. You cannot say you want to test something and then you don't have like a time frame. So you should give it a time frame that actually would allow you to get results and make an informed decision, right? So
what do you think is a standard time frame that you use?
So ideally, I always like to, like the minimum would be at least like 2 weeks. And then that's depending on what exactly you're trying to test, right? If it's a landing page, for instance, you're trying to test, of course, in 2 weeks, you could get some results. But ideally, you can actually go longer, maybe like a month, you know. If it's like maybe like ad copies with your ad copy variations, in probably like a few days, you can see results. But
yeah,
you might be shocked that the results you see in a few days, when you come back in 2 weeks time, it probably like is totally different. So giving it enough time, at least 2 weeks, should actually help. And then once you have that, next thing is document your learning. So what have you learned from this, right? Is there something similar that you've seen play out generally across your accounts? You know, based off that learnings, what your wins are, you can now iterate?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm in Nigeria, and I can pronounce it in different ways.
Man, please.
So you can now iterate based off, you know, your wins, and then that way you continue to double down, you know, generally. So that's for A/B testing. For campaign optimization, I think the thing with campaigns are never a set it and forget it kind of thing. So there's the need to consistently, you know, and regularly monitor your campaigns. You know, in monitoring your campaigns, you are able to see different things. You're able to see, okay, maybe weekends you have like a bump in CPA, and then you can say, okay, maybe from Friday evening you create like a rule, an automatic rule that decreases all your ad budgets during the weekend, and then an automatic rule that on Monday morning, you know, increase my budgets back to the previous pace it was before Friday, right? So that's regular monitoring, you know, it actually helps you to be able to effectively manage that. And then the other thing, so I would like to say about campaign optimization, you know, is also the fact that there are trends that are happening generally, right? So pay attention to the trends. But it doesn't necessarily mean that when everybody said, oh, that you need to start doing this, you immediately like run to your campaign and then implement it. The moment you do that, it could be like a recipe for disaster. So you want to pay attention to the trends, you know what's happening in the market. I'll give a very good example. So for instance, Google Ads currently pushes using broad match keywords, right? As much as there are people who say, oh, they've gotten good results from that in their search campaigns, it doesn't necessarily mean that when you use it, you'll actually get the best results, right? So the best thing to do is, Google has this in-platform A-B testing experiment feature where you can pretty much test that and say, okay, 50% of my budget split should go into testing with this and then the other 50% with this. So with, yes, you're keeping up with the trends and you're trying to adapt to it, but then you're trying to also make sure that it doesn't, in testing that trend, it doesn't actually make bad your already existing campaign performance. And then finally, if I remember, the last one you said was measurement and attribution, right?
Yeah.
So
I know there's a lot of problem with attribution, with always like cross multiple platform. Like, so what is your own best practice?
So for attribution, right? I think initially I mentioned the fact that there's a need for a multi-touch attribution process, right? Uh-huh. Because the truth remains that people have, I think that's how it has always been, pretty much, because I don't think anybody's buying process, you know, has always been like straightforward, like, oh, I see an ad, I click on it and I make payments, uh-huh. Right? Maybe there could be, but then very few. But ideally, people actually research, they go through like a whole lot of things, and then that's why you see certain brands, they are very heavy on awareness, just continue to ensure that, you know, they remain top of mind for you, such that when you actually need to make a buying decision, you're the first brand that comes to mind. I'm sure that for everybody, there's a particular brand that comes to mind when you want to buy a certain kind of thing. So, and then that's what they've done, they've just ensured that whether you have gone through all the various stages of buying, you still come back, you know, to them, and then they can find a way to actually, you know, measure that. So there's the need for that multi-touch attribution process, you know, and then you have different tools that could actually help you see like a bigger picture. So there are tools like factors.ai, there are tools like there's Dream Data as well, which I had mentioned earlier, you know, that you can use to actually see all this, like the journey and how people engage with, you know, different channels that you have and you're running campaigns on, and eventually, you know, where they end up at. Even Google Analytics also gives you that, right? If you have actually set up a conversion event and you try to see, okay, what are the conversion paths, so you'll be able to see, oh, from this particular channel, you know, early touch points, mid touch point, and then last touch point, and then, you know, that just gives you like a holistic view really of what's happening. Because most times, some particular channels, you might think that you're just wasting money on them. But eventually, when you have that multi-touch view, you would actually see that they are not wasting themselves. So I'll give an example. Something happened last week at work. So we're trying to just pretty much get feedback on something else. And then he said, oh, for this search keyword, for instance, we thought they would perform poorly, but they actually performed better than we expected. And then he was like, oh, from one of those keywords, we noticed that there was a touch point from a LinkedIn campaign. And mind you, we have been running LinkedIn for a while, and then on LinkedIn is pretty much, if you look at the last click, which is what most platforms, you know, use to attribute conversions most time, if you look at last click on LinkedIn, you just pretty much like see zero, right? But then, because there's also that process where, you know, you're able to see, you know, how other channels are contributing, you know, it just helps you have that in mind, and then you would not just write off a channel or write off a platform because you feel like, oh, there's nothing coming from there. But that multi-touch view actually gives you, you know, that distinct. Then another thing for measurement and attribution is, especially if a business is in the SaaS space, I think there's always need to always combine, I think people like to call it qualitative data and quantitative data, where especially if you are running a product where people actually engage with like the sales team, for instance, you know, there's probably maybe like they book a demo call, for instance, and they have to speak to someone. So you get your data from your qualitative part, which is all your ads, tracking and everything. you know, and then from the quantitative part where humans actually interact with humans to actually get their feedback, right? And then when you get that data, I think that's so, you know, combining them and then just looking for, like we learned in engineering, you know, your line of best fit could literally like help you make, those are like best practices, I think I would like to say. So like marketing and sales should actually be 5 and 6. They shouldn't be.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they should be, like you say.
They should be. They're mostly like, fighting. They're like they're fighting. and that's really a good thing. So yeah.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it. I don't think you think about it that way if you're just starting out. There's an overtime experience thing that just reflected in that. Since you've done this for a while, I'm not going to ask you about your most successful campaign. I'm going to ask you what has been close to your biggest fail, something that you thought would actually bang, like experimentation. Now you already had this plan and all of that, and it was a flop. Yeah, and how did you move past that and all of that?
That's an issue. Because I'm trying to think now, and I'm like, what would that be?
Don't tell me, you are learning from every experience. I'm asking you, like, a particular campaign or something, a strategy that you wanted to implement, and it just didn't work. And how did you move from that, take learnings, and eventually apply this to other design? I'm sure someone can pick up something from that.
Yes. So I think I would say, you know how there's this, I don't know, like to call it like a rave, but there's this talk around, if you're running campaigns, like you literally need to have like a dedicated landing page, right? So probably use tools like, yeah, I did mention, so in case you get to this part of this, and then when I talked about tools, actually that you could use, that I will show you, so you have tools for landing pages like Unbounce, for instance, where you can use to run like A/B tests, yeah. So there's this rave around, not a rave, but there's this, everybody's expected to do it, right? Use like a dedicated landing page, maybe build out something on Unbounce, for instance, you know, for your campaigns where you don't have like navigation buttons. So you just ensure that people are literally like focused on that page, you know. So I did one for a particular industry, or we did one because, I mean, the team actually came up with like a landing page, I submitted a request, and then said, okay, this is what we are trying to achieve with this. And I put out the landing page. So the landing page was good. The copies on the landing page were literally like updated to like, you know, the brand new messaging, right, and everything. And then we ran the campaigns. Sadly, right, it didn't turn out as great as I expected it to, because the results were tanking. And is tanking the right word? Yeah, they were going like down. Yeah. Okay. And then I kept on wondering, okay, what exactly could be the problem? So I decided to do like the regular A/B test, which ideally that should have been what I should have done from the onset, right? Instead of just changing all my campaigns landing pages, you know, I should have just done that 50-50 split, and then based on, you know, what I see in terms of statistical significance, right, I'll now say, okay, let's make this change. So after I made that change, then I saw that things were not going fine. So all I just did was I went that 50-50 route, you know, and then switched back to the generic landing page that's based on what's on the website and all, you know. And then what I found out from that was the fact that for that industry, and then that comes to understanding how different industries work. But for that industry, before people actually make purchase decisions, actually, they always want to read through different things on the website. So they could come into this page, but then they want to look at like use cases, or case studies, you know, or other solution pages that you have before they eventually make that decision to probably, you know, convert, sign up, or book a demo call, right? They have different boxes that they need to be checked before they actually make that decision. So yeah, so that was one. And yeah, and it has happened not just once, it happened with like two or three different clients. And then it just got me to understand that, like, really, like, industries differ. Yes, it's good, use a landing page, but at the same time, you know, do not just take everything for client sinker. You actually need to test. And that's the thing about this industry. They need to continuously test things. So yeah, I think that passes.
So that's been your takeaway, to consistently test?
Yeah.
I mean, I do agree with that. So let's talk about setting up a team. I'm sure you've been in a position to set up a team before, or mostly I feel like this question would address most business owners or founders, how they should think about setting up their either performance marketing team or their perfect performance marketing team member for success, so to equip them with the right tools. How should people typically think about equipping a performance marketing marketer for success or a team for success?
Yeah, so of course, there's the non-negotiable, which is them actually having like knowledge about the space first.
I thought you were going to say pay them well first. I was like, huh, I'm not the one hiring, no.
So, like, of course, yes, money also comes into play. Like, you need to compensate them well. Actually, a happy employee, you know, will literally like deliver anytime, any day for you. Like, you could literally call them. Like, you would not need to actually cajole them to work. You know, you could literally sense the joy. Like, oh, yeah, I'm being compensated well here. You know, and then I'm willing to give my best. All right, but beyond that, they need to have like the technical. Not technical yet, like the knowledge about, you know, the space. Then there should also be some bit of technical skills. Of course, like I said before, tools can always be like, you can always learn about tools, you know, because the thing actually is different people could have access to tools, and what separates A from B pretty much is how well they're able to use that tool. You know, so which can be learned, you know, on the job and all of that. But then there are certain tools that you should expect that, okay, by default, this person should be able to use, right? Can they navigate like Google Ads, for instance? Can they navigate Facebook Ads, for instance? All of those things are actually very important, you know. But beyond that, there's also the need to actually look out for someone whose values kind of like aligns with your company values, you know, and culture, because you don't want someone who probably doesn't exhibit the kind of company culture that you have working in your company. At the end of the day, when certain things start to happen, right, you just find out that, okay. And it's not like the person is probably like a wicked person, right? It's just that this doesn't align with them, right? So so things like, okay, is this person somebody who pretty much is open to sharing knowledge, right? There are some companies who are literally like big on knowledge sharing. You know, and then so if you want to hire someone, for instance, into a team, it doesn't mean that the person should have all the knowledge in the world, but the fact that there is that interest on their end, right, to actually share knowledge, you know, that's something that can be actually worked on and is pretty much aligned with the company value. So other things like values like transparency, you know, money is actually a very, very big thing, especially in this industry where you are pretty much like someone says, or someone once told me, you know, that the thing with this is that when you make a mistake, right, you're making a mistake with money. Unlike maybe like social media managers, for instance, they can delete their mistakes easily. Oh, a copy goes bad on the creative. You can, after posting it, you can literally like delete it. But imagine someone who actually has set up a campaign and then the campaign is running. Like, you literally have spent money with that campaign running. And then, so you need to, you know, very careful with that. So someone who is actually very transparent, because I mean, if you have a company culture with transparency, you need to also get somebody, you know, with that. So it's pretty much like trying to get people whose values and culture, you know, aligns with your company culture. There's also the part of the soft skills, like they call it. So in terms of like, you know, how well people are able to communicate, you know, even with how they relate with other people on the team, right? You pretty much would not want someone who doesn't know how to talk to others, right? Who probably feels that, oh, I'm a man, my team is kind of a woman, right? Why should you think that way? If this person is actually good at what they do, and then by merit, they are where they are, it does not matter, you know, what the gender role is. You still have work to do to get to where the person is, right? So people who are able to actually communicate, you know, well, ensure that, you know, they are not bringing in division to your team, you know, and all of that. So I think those are like other things that need to be looked at, you know.
I feel like, thanks for speaking to the business owners. Now let's speak to actual employees. How do you recognize impactful projects or projects that are worth working on? I guess from your experience, how do you see how to recognize impactful projects that would work for your career or stuff?
Yeah, so I think the first thing first, like with any other thing, should be, it should pretty much be clear. What is expected of you should be stated clearly, right? There should be nothing on that project that should be unclear, right? So if it's you that you need to do something, let it be you need to do X, Y, Z, right? It shouldn't be that you need to do X, Y, Z, but what is the but? I don't know, you're not making it clear, right? So that clarity is needed from the get-go. So you need to ensure that things are clear. Secondly, would be, you also have to look at it. So if you take on this project, what does it demand from you? Like in terms of your time, your skill set, you know, is this something that, in as much as it's taking your time, does it also help you improve, you know, in certain areas generally? So beyond the fact that, of course, you'd be applying like your knowledge of ad platforms, you know, and all of that stuff, does it also improve other areas like of your life? So for instance, if you need to make presentations, right, how well are you able to, does it help influence that or build other skills in you that you probably do not have, you know, at that point in time, or skills, competencies that I don't have at that point in time, right? And then the other thing too would be, you need to talk to people who are who have gone ahead of you, right, in the industry. You know, rub minds with them. Just try to find out what their view is pretty much around the project you are going on. Because there are some people who might have taken on similar things and then they have experiences to share. It's possible that the company itself that you are probably going to work with on has worked with them and probably have like tips that they could share with you, right, on, you know, okay, this is a good place to actually work, and then have this, you know, on your CV or your portfolio as something that you've worked with. Because at the end of the day, so building your portfolio is also very, very key. Like the kind of brands that you have worked with, you know, also helps give you some bit of leverage.
Credibility.
Yeah, and credibility as well. So I think those are the things. So one is things should be clear. Two, what does it take from you in terms of like, what is it demanding from you? Your time, your skills, you know, are you going to be improving or is it something that you're not going to improve upon? Then three, you know, speak to people, because you don't want to work with somebody who at the end of the day, you find out that, they are kind of like toxic, and then they literally like write you. I have an example. I was working with a brand, and then the person, I would not give out the gender, the person would literally like call in the morning and then say, and not just me, like you're calling like two or three different people who are managing your accounts together, and then you're literally like saying, you guys are blockheads, why are you doing this, why are you doing that? And then you literally like expect me to give you the best. Of course, I wouldn't be able to, because you're literally like draining me.
That's wild.
Yeah, like you're literally like draining me, so why should I, you know? So talking with people, what that does is that it actually helps you find out some things that hitherto you might not be able to. Because I could want you to work on something for me, and then I could tell you that, I mean, I'm the best thing since I like plantain, you know, since fried plantains.
Yeah.
But the truth is, somebody else who might have worked with me might tell you that I'm more, no,
that's right.
Not for you to start, right? So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That brings us to the last question. Yay! If you had to start all over again, would you do anything differently? If so, what? If not, how do you think people should just go about navigating the career, getting into the industry? People already in the industry looking to move into more performance marketing roles. Yeah. If there was anything you do differently, just share. If not, just final guidance.
If there's anything I could do differently, say anything. I think generally foundational knowledge, very, very key. The next thing is try to get practical experience, right? And I think that's what me being involved in like the Google Online Marketing Challenge I talked about earlier on, you know, helped me do. So beyond just learning from the Online Marketing Lab, I also actually put to test, right, the knowledge that I had gained. So gaining practical experience is very, 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 very important. The other thing too is you need to learn to be analytical, right? Because you're dealing with a lot of numbers. So you need to be able to, because when you're going to report to a business owners, for instance, they don't, of course, you're telling them, oh, 1 million impressions. But to them, what does 1 million impressions translate to for my business actually? How exactly is this 1 million impressions supposed to impact my business? What is the next step to take from getting 1 million impressions, right? So that's where being analytical comes in. You look at the numbers and then make recommendations based off, you know, those numbers that you've gotten. The other thing too would be network. Network is actually very key, right? The kind of people that you have access to. Sometimes, really, all you just need is, and having connections is not a totally bad thing, right? All you just need is someone mentioning your name in your room, and then all you have to do is present yourself and actually show that you're worthy of that mention, right? So, yeah. And then the other thing too is you need to continuously learn, right? The world is evolving at a very fast pace. You need to always ensure that you are learning. So there are different places that you could actually learn from. So if you're just starting out, there's the Google Skill Shop. HubSpot also has like a platform where you can learn from. I think WordStream has PPC University. Twitter has Twitter Flight School or X. It was called Twitter Flight School. LinkedIn has LinkedIn Learning, for instance. So these are places you can also just stay in touch with industry blogs. I think there's Search Engine Land, right? There's Search Engine Marketing. You could also follow like specific people.
Like Emmanuel Mang.
You could, but there are also specific people like, if it comes to like, maybe like tracking, attribution, measurement, you have like Measure School, you have Simon Ahava, right? Analytics Mania, you know, so you just have to ensure that you stay in touch, you know, with what's happening in the industry. Or you could even sign up for the official Google News blog where they literally post like what's going on, you know, generally. So I just think that for anybody, right, who's coming into that space, you know, like learning is key. You could also sign up for CXL.
CXL I think was great when I tried.
They are quite expensive, but
I think I did it when they were still offering scholarships.
Yeah.
That early days.
Yeah. So I think we'll stop there.
You can hear me clapping. I feel like I've learned a lot, like very much. I don't know why you were being dramatic before this, but it's like very
dramatic.
Absolutely. I mean, but I knew that you were just being dramatic. So thank you so much for coming on the call. I'm not going to ask you if you have any question for me because I don't think you do. So let's just wrap it up here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you found this helpful, feel free to share it with someone else you think might find it helpful. Also, we'd love if you could leave us a rating on our channel. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated for our next episode.